From Rich Broadcasting and KID News Radio, this is the East Idaho Eclipse Podcast, Episode 3, Community Meeting. I'm Josh Tyler.
And I'm Neil Larson.
Neil, you and I together last night on July 26th traveled down to the Civic Auditorium where they were having a community event highlighting some of the different schematics and logistics that they're working on right now to get ready for the eclipse.
It was a great meeting. Lasted just an hour and a half, couple of hours maybe. And they had representatives from the fire department, law enforcement were there. A great talk by a scientist. The mayor of Idaho Falls also spoke. And I was impressed, Josh, by this meeting, probably at the level of thoughtfulness and preparedness that local leaders have put into this. Also, transportation people, I want to include them as well. And they have, I don't know if you can think of everything when you consider a big event like this, but they got about as close as you can. They really have thought through this through every angle, and it seems like they've put forward a very, you know, a sober-minded plan to deal with the influx of up to 500,000 people.
In this episode, we will hear from Idaho Falls Mayor Rebecca Casper. We'll hear from Dr. Brian Tonks. He's a physics professor at BYU-Idaho. We'll also hear from the Idaho Falls City Police Chief and the Sheriff from the Bonneville County Sheriff's Office. We'll also hear from the Idaho Department of Transportation and several other city officials. It's a wonderful meeting. We recorded the entire thing. We've kind of cut up the best bits for you, and we're going to play them for you right here on this episode.
Sounds great.
We'll lead off with Idaho Falls Mayor Rebecca Casper.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. I think that this will prove to be a very informational meeting and informative meeting for you, or at least that's our goal. First of all, the 2017 Great American Eclipse is very exciting because it gives us an opportunity to showcase our community and all the special things about it. And that's something I'm actually looking forward to very much. But in order for us to be excellent hosts to the many visitors who are going to be coming here from all over the world, we felt strongly that we needed this evening, this opportunity, this conversation that we're going to have tonight to help all of us prepare and to be in the know about what we should expect as we have the world come to our doorstep. Some of you might be thinking, and you're not incorrect, that Idaho Falls is pretty darn good at hosting large-scale events. We have the Independence Day festivities every year. We just finished a very impressive air show. The War Bonnet Rodeo is a large-scale event. But I will tell you that the Great American Eclipse on August 21st presents an entirely new set of circumstances. This community has never experienced a once-in-a-lifetime celestial event of this magnitude. Forecasting and planning for the number of visitors is therefore incredibly difficult. We just don't have a blueprint to reference. Let me give you a couple of points on this. One is that NASA experts tell us, because of course they track these celestial events all over the world, and they have been in and amongst the crowds that accompany them. And they tell us that for every one person we think will be here, we should probably multiply that number by five. So that's an interesting, you know, comeuppance if you were being really casual about this. That's an interesting thought. This means that we could see as many as 500,000 visitors. You know, 500,000 people coming to the region. I should tell you that for months now, my office has been receiving phone calls, not just from people in Salt Lake, but from Australia, Europe, Canada, all different parts of the world. A few calls from company tour companies in Asia. So we know that the international interest in Idaho is very real. And as I said, I think it's also very exciting. Let me say also to you that we are aware of the questions about all of the measures that we're taking to prepare for this event. I have encountered not a few people who are rather skeptical that an eclipse could generate this much interest and bring this many people to Idaho. After all, they say, what's the big deal about it getting dark that happens every night, right? And to those comments, we reply this way. We would rather do everything we can to prepare than to take a wait-and-see approach. And further, I will tell you, we cannot afford to be wrong. Not to plan is to gamble with public safety. And that's just not something that any of the professionals that I have the privilege of working with want to do. We can't gamble that way. So we have to prepare, or if we're lucky, over-prepare. In the end, if this does just turn out to be a very small blip on the radar screen, one thing is certain, and that is that the planning process has brought us all very much closer together in terms of preparedness at the state, at the regional, and at the local level. And that's a good thing. First responders and community leaders are far more informed about our emergency preparedness and our teamwork that's needed to respond. And to how we plan how to communicate, and we've developed protocols, and all of those things are extremely valuable. We are prepared, I think, to face just about any kind of future emergency. And that's great news to my ears, no matter what happens on August 21st. So I hope you appreciate and can appreciate that, even if we do end up with fewer than half a million visitors here. This rare event is expected to have the greatest impact on Bonneville County in eastern Idaho. The eight surrounding counties in eastern Idaho will also be heavily impacted as well. As we learn more, we'll learn more from our next speaker, Professor Tonks, this kind of total solar eclipse occurs on average once every 375 years in any one location on the globe. And so that's exciting again. I keep using that word, but to me it is exciting. So why is there interest in eastern Idaho? This eclipse is rolling all across the United States. So what makes Idaho special? Well, I'll give you a couple reasons why we're attracting interest. One is our Idaho clear skies. Weather records show that the weather in Idaho historically is clear, cloud-free, rain-free on average, or better than average. Clear skies are something that if you're going to travel across the world to see an eclipse, you want to gamble on clear skies versus a rainy place. Secondly, our unparalleled view. We are bounded on the east and west by beautiful mountain ranges, and we're in the Eastern Snake Plain. And the Eastern Snake Plain offers a beautiful view of the sky, and that's special. We're not crowded with lots and lots of trees blocking the view, and we're not crowded with lots and lots of hills. There may be a butte here and there, but our view is great. Third, resources and amenities. The I-15 corridor, and I should say Highway 20 as well, is populated with cities that provide food, water, fuel, lodging, and access to medical care. And those are all things that tourists look for. And so we naturally will attract people who are looking for civilization. And then finally, it's affordable. Idaho is a great place to visit because your dollar goes pretty far, and people aren't being gouged when they come here. A burger is affordable, so people want to be here if they're budget conscious. So all of those things add up to make Idaho worth visiting. I'll tell you that our region is so ideal for these reasons, perhaps, and others, but it is so ideal that the Museum of Idaho has been designated as an official NASA viewing site, and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, as well as officials from NASA, will be on hand at the museum from August 18th all the way through the 21st with film crews, and they're going to be offering expert lectures and more exciting NASA-type things. And again, that's exciting. I'm very proud of that. I think our community, we deserve a NASA designation. So there we go. I will tell you that the city began planning and preparing and educating the community in earnest about 9 months ago. Last October, we hosted a public meeting, and I think it was at Eagle Rock Junior High, Eagle Rock Middle School. And there we invited members of the Chamber of Commerce and others. So we had some business owners that were showing up there, but we had a good discussion about those early thoughts about what to expect. In December, Idaho Falls, we hosted a meeting for all elected officials in the eight counties region. So county commissioners and city council members and mayors from throughout eastern Idaho. And we, again, began planning in earnest as elected officials. During that meeting, I called for regional emergency response planning. And so the region has an incident management team, and that team comprises emergency responders and public health officials and professionals from Teton County all the way to Bannock County. And since December, they have been meeting together to develop a plan. The team works in conjunction with the Idaho Office of Emergency Management and the, I believe it's two other state of Idaho incident management teams. The Idaho Falls Fire Chief Dave Hanneman, as well as the Pocatello Fire Chief David Gates, worked together to lead the Eastern Idaho team. This team has developed plans for safety, logistical and operational support, communications, and public information messaging. And much of what you're going to hear tonight has been identified as being valuable information that the team wants us to be able to pass on to you. Besides the team, I will tell you that multiple agencies have been involved with the preparation so far. And hopefully on the screen you have an idea of just how many public and quasi-public organizations are coming together to make sure that we're safe. The public sector, or government's primary role in all of this, must be public safety. As you can imagine, there are many public health and safety concerns that attend a large-scale event like this, and when you have this many people coming together in big crowds. And we have, in addition to just health kinds of issues, or perhaps public safety, you'll think crime kinds of issues, we also have challenges that are associated with communications, and not being able to communicate well could also impact safety. This is why it's important that we talk to you tonight so that you can be prepared and know what to expect. For some of you, I see some experienced faces in the crowd. You will know what it's like to exist without a cell phone. And when we tell you that cell phones might not work at some points through the weekend and through that critical Monday, you will not fall apart and go to pieces, but there might be some who need to be told so that they can understand that they may not be able to take a picture and text it. They may not be able to report their feelings on Facebook. We may not be able to do that sharing that we're so used to doing. And so be prepared to know that communications will be impacted. So expect interrupted cell service and internet service. That has large-scale implications because most of our credit cards are run with internet. And so there may be some old school on the credit cards that some of you know what I was doing, some of you don't, but some of that might be happening. We also, just talking about communication, we might experience language barriers. And so we have a lot of people who may be coming from foreign countries who may not have their interpreter handy and who may struggle with not being able to read a sign that tells them how to get their help. I would hope that being prepared and knowing that, we'll all be able to reach inside our hearts and pull out our compassion and help people who might be struggling because of a language barrier instead of being grouchy that they can't speak English. So little things like that will help as long as we're prepared. So I should tell you too that public safety is not just medical, not just crime. It also involves traffic safety. And when it comes to our roads and highways, I can tell you that we expect the crowds probably to trickle in over the course of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it won't feel so ominous leading into it, but we're also thinking that the moment the eclipse is over, people are gonna get in the car and wanna go home. They've gotta get back to work on Tuesday or whatever their plans may require. And so we think that the largest traffic impact may be in the afternoon on Monday. So be prepared for that. And if it means that you wanna not be on the road at that time, then you may wanna just plan ahead for that. I will tell you too that preparing and educating residents on important health and safety information like this is what our planning teams are concentrating on now. So you will hopefully see messaging coming across on social media, perhaps on the radio, and I'm not sure if we have any TV spots planned. We do, so, but there will be that messaging coming out, but you guys heard it here tonight first. But what we need is help with getting that message to penetrate throughout the entire community and not just with those of you who came here tonight. So if there's any way that you can share what you learned tonight, tell your neighbor, tell your friends, tell your family members, that would be very helpful. I will tell you that there's no doubt that this summer is going to be challenging for many of us. City and county employees have been told to not plan on taking vacations and to put in those extra hours. But I don't think we can count on first responders and the officials that stood up to carry the day. It really is going to be all of us who are going to carry the day in terms of hosting potentially 500,000 visitors to our city. The point is that we all have an important role to play in terms of making this a successful experience for our guests and visitors and for ourselves and our family members. And so it's all on us. And that's why we're so pleased to have such a great turnout here tonight. So thank you for sitting in a warm auditorium and having to fan yourselves here and there just to get through the meeting. But thank you for being here to listen and hear what there is to hear. I will tell you that tonight we're issuing a call to action. And I've already alluded to it, so I need to just wind down here, but we can't do it alone. Everyone is needed. Each of you knows this community as well as or better than I do, or than some of the other officials do. We simply need for you to show that you care about your community. And so after we're finished here tonight, you're going to be informed, and that it prepares you to be highly aware and highly informed ambassadors. So please share what you know, as we mentioned before. Please be welcoming to our guests. All of this activity may seem like a significant challenge, at least from the planning side, but it's not, I don't think. I think what it is a tremendous opportunity to, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for all of us to showcase the Eastern Idaho experience. A lot of people are going to be visiting our community and our state for the very first time. I want them to love it as much as we do. So we need to put on our smiles and not be impatient. And we can do it. This is what we do. We're Eastern Idahoans. And so be prepared to be dazzled and amazed by how thorough the planning is going. And send your questions in. And thank you very much again for coming.
Well, we will be having a number of eclipse chasers coming into our area.
This is Dr. Brian Tonks, physics professor at BYU-Idaho.
We have a group from MIT, for example, that will be on the BYU-Idaho campus, led by Dr. Rick Benzel, who is one of the members of the New Horizons team. And again, this is a group of alumni of MIT who are basically eclipse chasers. The last eclipse they went to was in Indonesia a couple of years ago. And so they're looking forward to being here. We have a group from Los Angeles, from UCLA coming up. There's a group from the Netherlands that will be camped out up there. So we that's just an example, a spattering of some of the people that will be coming to our area. And so is it going to be a big deal? I think so. The impacts, again, have been mentioned a little bit. One of the things I tried to do was to do some, as we were thinking about the eclipse up in Rexburg, trying to make some estimates of how many people would come. Now, whatever number we put on there is completely unknown for sure, but in doing some research, there was a lady in from the University of Missouri who made some comments that I thought were pretty important. So if we think about it for just a minute, it turns out that within that totality period, there is going to be, or the path of totality, I should say, there's about 12 million people across the nation that live in that region. Now, it turns out that about 88 million people live within about 200 miles, and the entire population of the lower 48 states can get to a place to see the eclipse in about a day's drive. So this is what this lady from Missouri said, if a mere 3.5% of these people were to travel to the totality region, that would double the population. So think about that for just a minute. Again, most of you know that we have a couple of pretty good-sized cities to the south, and had a lot of people in this room have relatives there. I've done a little bit of informal polling, just asking people how many folks are coming to your place for the eclipse. And I've so far found that I haven't found anybody who doesn't have somebody coming for the eclipse. And most people tell me that the population of their house is going to double, triple, quadruple. And that's just the people that they know that are relatives. That isn't really the eclipse chaser. So the numbers that have been thrown around are certainly not unrealistic. Also, there will probably be a lot of foreign travel. We've had inquiries from Pete, from groups from China, from Japan, Australia was mentioned earlier. We've had a lot of inquiries from foreign groups. Again, the U.S. is considered to be a safe place to travel. And of course, getting around in the U.S. is a lot easier than it is in a lot of other places in the world. So I think you can see that even though the numbers sound huge, and they are huge, it's not unrealistic to expect that we will be able to, that we will be hosting those kinds of numbers. And as the mayor said, if we don't have all those people show up, well, it's better to be prepared than not to be prepared. I hope, though, that you will all have the opportunity. Again, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. The next solar eclipse that will go through the United States happens in 2024, but it will cut from Mexico up through Texas and then up through Illinois and parts north, we will have probably a 60 or 70% eclipse here, and it will not be nearly as impressive as the total eclipse. So I hope that you'll take the opportunity to get a pair of eclipse glasses. Make sure that you're wearing the eclipse glasses anytime the sun is, that the major bright disk of the sun is out. Now, during the totality period, when the corona is the only thing that's visible, you can take the glasses off. In fact, if you don't take the glasses off, you won't see anything. So take the glasses off during that period, but as soon as the sun starts to come back out from behind the eclipse, make sure to put those glasses back on. But I certainly hope that you'll get a pair of those glasses, a pair probably for everybody that you have in your family. The other thing that I wanted to mention to you is that a lot of people will probably try to take photographs of the eclipse. Well, first of all, there's no camera that could possibly capture the detail that your eye can capture. So, and there will be lots of videos and so forth that will be published online that you'll be able to have access to. So if you've never seen an eclipse before, the recommendation of all of the experts I've read is to just enjoy the experience. Don't fumble around with trying to set the f-stops, so forth and so on, or you'll miss it. I hope that you'll enjoy the eclipse and that you'll, as the speaker said, be great hosts for those people that will come. Thank you very much.
Coming up, we'll hear from Idaho Falls City Police Chief Mark McBride, Bonneville County Sheriff Paul Wild, and Deputy Chief Dave Coffey. Next on the East Idaho Eclipse Podcast, after this word from our sponsor.
The East Idaho Eclipse Podcast is brought to you by the Eclipse Mega Movie Project. You can join this first-of-its-kind citizen science project gathering scientifically valuable data from the August 21st, 2017 total solar eclipse with the help of more than 1,000 volunteer photographers. By stitching together thousands of photographs captured along the path of totality, the project team will create an expanded and continuous view of the total eclipse as it crosses the United States. If you want to join the official Mega Movie photo team, apply online at eclipsemega.movie. Do it by August 6th.
First off, just to let you know, the law enforcement public safety has been quite involved in the incident planning of this event that the mayor talked about for several months. We've had staff members that have attended all these meetings. We're considering all the issues that we can consider for public safety. So we're planning, been planning quite a while. But we are planning, as everybody says, for increased public and public services, the demand on public safety. We think it'll go up immensely. I think the biggest issue that we may have, especially on Monday, the eclipse, is probably the traffic. It's hard to create a traffic plan when you don't know where everybody's gonna be going. And so this is gonna be a difficult task for all of us. So I can tell you, for the Sheriff's Office and the Police Department, all hands are on deck. Our staff will all be working the entire weekend, 12-hour shifts, no days off, no holidays, no vacations, anything. Even our detectives will be in uniform out there helping with this event. So we're expecting to be able to handle most of this. Also, in preparation for this, because we're not sure of the traffic and how it will affect our response, we're dividing our city up into different sectors and assigning groups of officers in each sector, in cars, bikes, and on foot, so we can respond to those issues more quickly, especially if we can't get through traffic to other places. So that's the main thing, how we're going to try to respond to any needs that the community has for public safety. As you're out there and about, make sure you're alert, especially when you're driving, alert to pedestrians and cyclists. If there's this many people in cars, there's probably this many pedestrians running around, so be very cognizant of that. Probably be a lot of people at the totality of the eclipse in the middle of the road, stop somewhere, they might just stop and start gawking. You just gotta all pay attention to what's going on. If by chance the power goes out for some reason, traffic lights go out, you've got to treat them as a four-way stop. Don't just run through them because there's not a light out there. It's a four-way stop. You've got to pay attention to that. We often get questions about parking residential areas. It's a public street. The public can park on any public street. that they choose to, as long as they say no parking, an official no parking sign. So be aware of that. Some people get possessive of the parking in front of their homes. We can't make them leave. It's public street. So I'm going to ask you, just have patience. Patience with visitors, patience with one another, patience in your driving, patience with public safety. We talked briefly about the phone service. Phone service, internet service may not be available. This makes it difficult to call 911 for emergency services. Now, we do have extra staff on hand to answer the phones. So make sure, you know, if you have an emergency call, oftentimes dispatch gets phone calls, find out about the weather, find about the road conditions, find about the events going on. That's not the place to call for emergency services. There's other places to find that information. So we need your help to make sure we don't call for those issues. The bottom of our dispatch center dispatches for all of law enforcement, every city and the sheriff's office within the county of Bonneville. They dispatch for all the fire departments, all the cities in the county of Bonneville and the fire district. They dispatch for emergency medical services in all of Bonneville County and in parts of Jefferson and Bingham County. So we have to make sure that we can get into those emergency services by calling the dispatch center. If you happen to be involved in a crash, an assist a property damage crash, what we're going to suggest, because we feel that we're going to be inundated with more emergency calls, is that you exchange information. Pull out of the way if you can, exchange information, take your pictures, and be on your way. We can report it later if we need to, but just to get out of the way. Emergency response vehicles, they're coming down the road, try to get out of the way so that they can get through to respond to these emergencies. There's probably going to be a lot of people here who will help help inform the public in advance of that. But personal safety, just be aware of your surroundings. Stay alert when you're out and about. Secure your valuables, the safety issues you have with your vehicles, all that stuff. Make sure you're aware of those things. Business security, be alert. I recommend those businesses that usually have one person on staff, you probably ought to put a couple there, especially if the phones go out. Make sure you have people there. Be ready. Food, water, cash, gasoline in your cars. Another thing I'd recommend is medical services. You should probably know where your closest medical services are that are going to be open, just in case you can't get to the hospital or can't get through to us. Know what those routes are. Plan your family and business safety plan. Again, we've been quite involved in planning this for quite a while. Sheriff, what else do you want to talk about?
I am glad to see such a large crowd here. What I'd like you guys to know, first off, that your law enforcement, city, county, the fire, EMS, we've all been working very diligently to try to plan for what's going on. We don't know exactly how many people we'll get. We have estimates, but we'll take that and we have planned towards that big event so that we can cover it. With that, all the law enforcement around us has offered their assistance. So Tri-County Sheriffs, all the sheriffs in Eastern Idaho have joined together. They're prepared to come in and help us if we need to. But you gotta remember, we have multiple counties already involved in the incident. So we are planning, we are engaged, we're a partner with each other to make sure that we're safe, make sure that you guys are being taken care of. But it's going to be a big event, so we have to be patient and make sure that we join together as a community, as a county, as a whole Southeast Idaho as this event comes. We have no control over this. This event is coming no matter what we do. We can't tell people to stay away. There's no way we can stop it. It's going to happen. So if the sky is clear, which history tells us it probably will be, then we need to be prepared for it. So we are diligently working to prepare for all of those things. One of the things that I would say to you, think about your own personal safety and the safety of your homes and your families. Everything is as normal as it can be. The community has to be prepared. We have to remember that we're a potential victim at any time. That doesn't have to scare us, but we're just aware. We want to be aware of our surroundings, what's going on. I don't see that we're going to have a major influx of criminal activity or anything like that, But with a major influx of people, there's going to be issues that we'll deal with. Probably more than anything, we'll deal with a lot of medical issues. Fire EMS is on top of that. They are looking and figuring out ways to make sure that we can get where we need to be and make sure people are taken care of. So I just want to reassure you that as law enforcement, fire, EMS, we are a team. We're working very closely together. We'll talk, Chief Coffey will talk about a special team that comes in for a regional response, and we have local response. That we'll all be together, we'll be watching what's going on, we'll be making sure that we understand what events are occurring, and be able to get where we need to go and have people where they're needed. So as a community, we must join together to make sure that this event comes off. It's gonna happen with or without us, so we might as well jump in. We can make it happen, we can be a good community, we can make sure that people are taken care of, and above all, we can make sure our community's taken care of.
Thank you, Sheriff. I just want to say one other thing, that every event, major event that we have in the city of Idaho Falls, 4th of July, those kind of things, we work quite closely with the Sheriff's Office, the state police, medical providers, and everything to provide services, and this is no different other than a larger scale. But I do appreciate, as the Chief of Police here in Idaho Falls, the cooperation and support of all those other agencies. Thank you, Sheriff.
We've heard the term used quite frequently from the mayor to the sheriff about incident management team. So what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes and tell you what an incident management team is. A little history, back in the 1970, state of California was burning up. Firefighters got together and they created a program called FireScope. From it, we developed the incident command system. What it is it just puts order to chaos, basically. It allows for span and control. Many of you in your workforces already know what that is. It is able to contract and expand with the size of the incidents. And so that's what we have in place. So we have an incident command system, an incident management team, and from that we have an incident management and support team. So here locally we'll have an incident management team here for Bonneville County, and that umbrella that oversees that is the IMAS team, the incident management and support team, and it's actually IMAS 3 team, and it's going to take care of everything from Bandit County up to Teton County. And as the sheriff was talking about this tri-state or tri-county agreement that they have with the law enforcement, by putting this in place, what it does for us is those resources that are in Bandit County can be in Teton County if need be, and all points in between. So what it is, it's just neighbors helping neighbors in a nutshell. One of the best examples that I can give you for the for an incident management team is the Henry's Creek fire that we had last year. Coincidentally, the anniversary of that will be on the 21st of August. But I think it was a good example of how an incident management team can work. What happened there is that the fire started here in Bonneville County. Well, it stayed in Bonneville County. Anyway, the fire started here in our district and it grew. We had those winds, 50 mile an hour winds. The fire took off and it was quickly evident that this was going to be on our span of control. And so we were able to stand up a Type 2 incident management team. You saw, I think most of you saw, all the resources that came in, and we were able to mitigate that that fire. Our approach to the planning is we're going to identify the threats, and we're going to try and identify how to mitigate those threats. How big are the threats going to be? How severe? Can we prevent those hazards or incidents before they happen? And how quickly can we get back to normal? That's really what it's all about, is how quickly can we get back to normal? But when we talk about impact, what we're talking about is not the impact of the eclipse, but the impact of the crowd, that the crowd's gonna have in our community. The sheriff and the chief also talked about communications, and the mayor talked about that. I can tell you right now, your cell phone is not gonna work. We're looking at ways to mitigate that. We're working with the wireless providers here in our area and looking at putting up what they call POW, cell on wheels. The hardest thing about this, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, I don't know if you guys remember Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense. I think he one of his most famous quotes, it's the things that we don't know that we don't know. It was the unknowns that we're trying to plan for here, and that's what's so difficult about this, is the unknown unknowns. There are some things that we do know that we're going to have problems with, and unfortunately, it's going to impact all of you. The slow response for emergencies. Currently, in our community, you enjoy an EMS service that whether you call with a bloody nose or a cardiac arrest, you get an ambulance. That's just the way our system is set up. But we plan on having so many calls that we're going to have to establish what we call priority-based dispatching. And that's where we basically are going to have to empower our dispatchers to decide who gets an ambulance and in what order. Something that we haven't had to do before, but I think we're going to have to cross that bridge in short order. Another thing that we talked about that we that live here are going to take for granted, the things that we're thinking about, is just the elevation. You know, we're sitting right at 5,000 feet that we take for granted. There are a lot of these people who are going to be coming from sea level that are already have health compromised. We've been planning this thing for months. If we fall on our face on July or on August 21st, it is not due to lack of planning, I assure you that. We've been meeting with all the counties in between, Bannock to Teton County. They all have the same plans in place. And again, we are all going to lean on each other. One of the things that we talked about is mitigating things that we can prevent. We're going to try and do some roadside mowing, make sure that the shoulders are mowed. A lot of guys or people that we talk to, they say, well, why don't you just put a burn ban in effect? Well, it's easier said than done. We've planted that seed with our county commissioners, and I think it was well received. But agencies like the Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service, they actually have a matrix in place that they have to go through. They just can't slap down a burn ban. There has to be things in place before that happens. So a lot of our area here, we are hoping that we can get a burn ban in place, but there might be some situations where we can't do that. You know, really, at the end of the day, we are planning for the worst, and we're going to hope for the best. And again, I want you to know that we are going to have everything in place that we can, like the police and sheriff's department. We have a whole bunch of guys hired back because we have only so many pieces of equipment, but I have more manpower than I have vehicles. So we're going to have people, we're going to have EMTs and paramedics in-house to try and assist you as best we can. So if we can't get to you, come to us. We'll have somebody there. Again, we'll get through this. August 22nd can't come soon enough.
There's still more from the East Idaho Community Meeting regarding the eclipse coming up next here on the East Idaho Eclipse Podcast. It's after a word from our sponsor. The East Idaho Eclipse Podcast is sponsored by Scotty's Drive-In, serving Idaho Falls for over 50 years and home of the mouth-watering Eclipse Burger. This original has an onion bun, ham, egg over easy, bacon, and cheddar cheese. It will eclipse your hunger, and when you pair it with fresh-cut Idaho French fries and one of Scotty's famous shakes, totality awesome. Scotty's Drive-In, just off Northgate Mile in Idaho Falls. Come hungry.
More from the Idaho Falls Eclipse Community Meeting. This is Kelly Eager from the Environmental Health Division.
I am happy to be here to let you know how we at the Health Department can help you prepare and be safe for the eclipse. We do have on our website an event planning guide that's very informative in all the different areas that we feel we want to make sure individuals take into consideration, anywhere from sewage disposal, drinking water quality, solid waste, which is actually the garbage that you have going into your garbage cans, and food safety. On their website, we also have information about water labs that can help you take the water samples and actually know what the water quality is, information about our septic permits if you need to receive one, and also information if you want to prepare food and either give it away and sell it at the different venues around the area. So for information, just to make sure you are aware that some of what we are concerned about is if you are opening up your home to either, as we've talked about earlier, family members, individuals maybe renting home space within your dwelling, if you're going to be possibly even opening up a field and putting tent sites, RV sites, anything like that that actually lets individuals stay on your property, it's imperative that you talk to us. We need to help you decide whether or not You may need to be looking at pumping your septic system. If you are actually a business that is on an individual septic system as well, we would encourage that you're pumping that system, because if you're already dealing with the regular amount of people as we're talking tonight, you could be looking at 5 times that amount of individuals using your septic systems, anywhere from washing of hands, flushing of toilets, actually preparing food. We're looking at the concerns that if you have a failed septic systems, you may have to look at closing your business, and that's not good for obviously the economy that you're going to be trying to incorporate. If you are looking at the potential of having what would be pit privies, those actually would need to be a permitted facility. We can't have people just digging a hole and putting waste inside that. We want to make sure that the water quality is being protected, not only for yourselves, but the residents above or below you. As far as drinking water, if you're not on a city municipality where they actually test the water, you are responsible for the water quality of your own home and anybody that could be using the water, such as a well that you're going to be maybe having individuals use in those fields. We want to make sure that that water is safe to drink, not only for bacteria, but also for nitrates. It's very important that those individuals that are going to be drinking that water is safe, especially if they're not used to drinking the water. Bacteria can be very harmful. Nitrates can be very damaging to pregnant women, the unborn fetus, and then any child that's under 2 years of age or younger, or those individuals that are immunocompromised. If you have information that when you get your well tested and you don't know the results, what they mean, please call the health department, and our information on our website can help you to know what phone numbers to call. When it comes to solid waste, it's not necessarily the most exciting thing to think about, but we don't know if this eclipse and the days following is going to delay your waste disposal from the collections that you're normally be having. So we want to make sure that you have plenty of receptacles, garbage bags. We want to make sure that that waste is going to be out of the way of rodents or insects that could spread diseases. So we just would encourage you to think ahead of the game and make sure that you're well supplied. And finally, one of the biggest things, and always when there's a venue, there's always food. We want to make sure that those individuals that are consuming the food that you're either making, or those food products that you're out buying, that that food is safe for you and the other individuals to eat. If you are a current business right now that has a food license, you need to make sure that you're aware of whether or not you need to actually come to the health department and get what would be a temporary license. If you're not using your facility specifically to serve the food but wanting to go to a different location, you may need a temporary license. And we do actually have a deadline of next Friday, August 4th, is the last day that you can apply for a temporary application. So it's very important that you work with us to make sure that you get that license if it is required. Another thing is, if you aren't necessarily doing food that requires temperature control, we also do have an allowance of a exemption form if you're looking at doing products such as cottage food, so very simple breads. We want to make sure that we are aware of what you're doing, and if you are going to be at an event, you're going to potentially have to show either your food license or proof of that exemption. So we want to make sure it's easy for you to be able to do what you want to do to potentially serve food. Just make sure that you are making yourself safe. Make sure that you have sunscreen. Individuals may not think about, whether being out and watching the venue, about the safety of their, you know, their skin and skin cancer. So please make sure that you're applying that sunscreen at least 20 minutes before going out. If you are going to be out in the elements, especially those fields that may have concerns with ticks, that you're being protective of the clothing that you're wearing. And then finally, that if you are questioning at all anything that the health department can help you with in the weeks prior to the event, our Facebook is definitely the most opportunity to find the update information that we can help to provide you. Thank you very much.
Lastly in the episode, we'll hear from Ben Burke. He's the traffic engineer for the Idaho Transportation Department.
So a lot of you are probably concerned about traffic, and as am I, for sure. On I-15, in a typical year, we have about $4 to $6 million worth of projects that are used to either enhance or to just rehabilitate I-15. This particular summer, we're spending $60 million on I-15, and you've seen it. If you've driven south of here, you've seen the work that's happened. And I wanted to just go through the projects that are on I-15 from the south to the north and give you the status and what the status will be on the day of the eclipse. So the first one here on the south is Aramo to McCammon. It will be half complete. That means half, either the, I don't know what side they're working on right now, but that side will be complete. The traffic will be outside of what we call a crossover situation, and there'll be two lanes in each direction on that day. The next project there is the Income Bridges, and they're working on the crossovers for those bridges right now, but none of that bridge work will begin until after the eclipse. So again, that area will have two lanes in each direction. The next project is the Fort Hall of the Burns. That one is done. And if you've driven on it, it's very nice. We have another project called Sand Road to South of Blackfoot, and that one won't start until after the eclipse. So again, in that area, it will have two lanes in each direction during that day and that weekend and the weeks after, or the week after. The next project is the Lava Beds project. This is from the Blackfoot rest area to Bingham Bonneville County line, and right now they are working on all the traffic is in the northbound lanes, in one lane in each direction, and they're working on the northbound lanes, and that also will be open by eclipse day. We have a few projects to the north that really haven't impacted I-15 travel. There's some bridges, overpass bridges that have been closed. They may still be closed, but it's just the county road that's going over top. There's no interchange of those bridges. That is 81st, 113th, and 2nd North McCarty. We have an Osgood ramp reconstruction, which will start on the 28th of August, so that will be outside of that area. We have two projects going on in the north from Spencer to Montana State Line, and they will be closing lanes during the day and paving, and then that should be open at the night, but they're going to be out of the way on the day of the eclipse. There should be four lanes total on I-15 on the day of the eclipse. It's an amazing feat to have that. We've done a lot of change order work and had contractors change their schedule to do that. But those are some of the projects on I-15 that will be in effect or around that time, so be prepared. We're not going to have any maintenance projects in process, so we're not going to have any lanes closed. We're not going to be doing any mowing. We're not going to be doing any of those maintenance projects that require some type of traffic control. We are placing 50 portable toilets, and I'll give a shout out to A1 Rental. They're giving us those toilets. They're not giving them, we're paying for them. But they're going to be scattered on I-15, US 20, State Highway 33, US 93, 28, 22. And I was counting how many routes is impacted based off each district in our state. District 1 and 2 is Coeur d'Alene and Lewiston, and they don't get impacted at all. District 3 has 95, they have Weezer, they have 95 and 55. In District 4, they have 21 and 75 right there just north of Sun Valley. District 5 has none. And District 6 is our district, has 26, 22, 30, 31, 33, 32. It's just all of them. So that's one thing that's really difficult. Like Coffee said, there's no way to plan for the direction that they're coming. Like when we had the air show, we know everyone's going to the airport and then going away from the airport. We can plan for that, but we can't plan for if it's everywhere. There's been some rumors of 10,000 people being on Mount Boro. And I'm like, ugh. If any of them have a medical emergency, how are they going to get off? Are they all going to be stuck on name of that ridge? Chicken Out Ridge. There's a lot of people on the Menan Buttes, which happens to be center of totality. Sage Junction has one or two bathrooms there at our port of entry. We're going to put 10 of those toilets there just to ensure that doesn't become a problem. So all of our construction projects are done. Our maintenance projects are done. We're turning all of our personnel. We have 120 plus employees in our district. They will become incident response. We have these trucks If you've seen an incident response truck before, it has everything that you need to get that vehicle or get the problem situated and moving again. So they will have 5 gallons of water, 5 gallons of gas, drinking water, fire extinguishers, first aid kits, jacks to change tires. We're going to be there to do whatever, and we'll continue to do whatever roving that we need to do and ensure that cars that are stuck can get moving again. And it doesn't make sense for a trained officer to help someone change a tire. Let's get them where they need to be, and you can get our staff, our maintenance staff, to help out to do that. We have 4 water trucks that carry anywhere between 1,500 and 1,700 gallons. We're going to be just driving around and help out whatever emergency services might be. They're not firefighters by any means, but if they see a small fire that might start by a car that happens to drive through a field, they might be able to mitigate that. State police is not here, ISP is not here, but they are bringing in 4 officers for the lane, and they're staying in our Island Park bunkhouses that we have for employees up there. ITD has their own fuel. They have their own fueling stations. We'll make sure those are all full. All our rest areas will be stocked up with toilet paper. I do want to ask my business manager if I can buy all the toilet paper in the valley the day before. I wanted to do that up in Rexburg when all the students come back, and then sell it in the corner. I'm looking for innovative ways to generate revenue. We have these, and you can't see this, but we have ATRs. An ATR is an automatic traffic recorder. And what it does is it collects data at certain points throughout all our roads. However, the data usually is only available about 5 to 6 months after the effect. So that doesn't help us. We'll know exactly how many car people are coming, but we're trying to get this real time. So we'll know how many people are coming through at the end of every day as the weekend approaches, and then we'll see them leave, and then we'll have a great opportunity afterwards to really do an analysis to find out how many people did come. We have 3 painted landing zones for helicopters. Each one of these is at Sage Junction, one is at DuBois Rest Area, and one is up at Elk Creek. And we're gonna ensure that they're coned off so that they're available for anything that could happen. There has been some talk about what to do and send all traffic, all 4 lanes of I-15 in one direction back to Utah. Now, I'd love to do that all the time. That's going to be tough to do. The on-ramps are designed different than the off-ramps. The lines would be wrong. The signs are wrong. The potential for a bigger problem than just sitting in traffic is a bigger concern for me. So our idea is, let's keep everything open as much as possible. There's, cell phones won't work, so maybe this won't work, but there's 3 apps that you can get out there. We have our 511 app. Look at it all you want up until that day. We have a 511 app specifically for truckers, and that more or less is for width restrictions, height restrictions, length restrictions, trailer restrictions, all those different ones. And if you're in that industry, you might want to download that one. We have this I-15 app that was made specifically this year for those projects on I-15, and it gives travel times between each area, and we're broadcasting that onto some of our message boards. So download these, check them out, have them on your phone. If the phones do work, that'd be interesting. That's all I have. We'll have questions here in a minute.
This episode of the East Idaho Eclipse podcast was produced by me, Josh Tyler. Want to give a special thanks to the City of Idaho Falls and all of the fine officials that put together that community meeting. It was very informative. There's more information online at our website. Make sure you check that out. It's kidnewsradio.com/eclipse. Music for the East Idaho Eclipse podcast is by Lee Rosevier. Our credit music is written, produced, and performed by Chris Zabriskie. Again, our website where you can listen to all the episodes and find a ton of Eclipse resources. We've got all the safety information, traffic updates, live camera feeds, as well as an Eclipse event calendar, a whole bunch of geeky Eclipse science information that we've collected. It's all online at kidnewsradio.com/eclipse.
And we want to hear from you. Send us your Eclipse stories and submit your questions at kidnewsradio.com/eclipse. And don't forget to subscribe to the East Idaho Eclipse podcast so you don't miss an episode. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere else you get podcasts.
The East Idaho Eclipse podcast is a production of Rich Broadcasting and KID News Radio.